Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the moon. I'm your host for this evening, Lawrence Ray. And today I am joined by my co-host, Ricardo Martinez and Jerry. And today we are interviewing Samurai Wallet, which is a mobile Bitcoin wallet designed with censorship resistance, security, and privacy in mind. How are you doing today, sir?
Very good. Very happy to be here with you.
Fantastic. Good to hear it. And we're happy to have you, of course. So I guess my first question to get us cracking is to head straight back to the early days and ask you for the origin story of Samurai Wallet. Where did this come from and where did the idea to create this wallet come from?
Sure. So I got involved in Bitcoin in around end of 2012. And my co-founder got involved in Bitcoin around the same time. We both had similar trajectories as we got more involved, which ended up in 2013, both of us leaving our fiat full-time jobs and going full-on into Bitcoin. So working for Bitcoin companies, getting paid in Bitcoin, and living off Bitcoin. I know you said that this wasn't a BitRefill shill, but BitRefill made that hugely possible for us. In those early days, being able to buy your groceries and whatnot. But one of the things we both kind of started feeling in 2015, so we had been in the industry now for 2 years, is that there wasn't a big enough emphasis on privacy, transaction privacy in particular. Living off of Bitcoin, making lots of Bitcoin transactions, looking at the blockchain and learning how transactions ultimately worked, made us realize that we needed to, if we wanted to obtain basic transactional privacy on the Bitcoin network, we would need to create the software ourselves. So in 2015, we started Samurai Wallet. And right from the get-go, as you mentioned in the intro, it was with privacy and security in mind. And everything that we've done since that point has been about maximizing our users' privacy, and the two most important users were ourselves. So making sure that we could use Bitcoin in the way we wanted to, and we had the hypothesis that there would be a lot of other users who would be interested in that as well. And I think it's turned out to be true.
Gotcha. So there's something that was built out of, that you guys are kind of your target market and people similar to you are your target market. So it's built from the passion and kind of working on this is what I want. And then obviously develop from there to appeal more and more to the wider market. Where did the name Samurai come from? I'm curious.
We were playing around with a bunch of different concepts right at the early days, one of which was like Ninja Wallet. The other was... That kind of shifted into Samurai. And then my co-founder, TDevD, he lives in Paris, and he spelled Samurai the French way, which is Samurai, which I had never seen before, not speaking French. And I just liked the way it looked. I said, it's different. There's not going to be a lot of things with that name. And it kind of is on the original theme of Ninja. That's where we ended up. It was kind of a mistake. He was speaking in English, but he spelled it the French way. And I liked it.
That's kind of cool. It's like I always find with names, there's these like interesting stories where something has like maybe one or two different meanings or like a kind of crazy reason. It's like if you find out why the Mr. Olympia contest is called Olympia is because I think they were like drinking Olympia beer. And then one of them was like, this sounds kind of cool and manly. And then it was like, boof, that's right. How it comes about.
Another good one is, so my co-founder TDevD is as he's known these days, or Samurai Dev. The way that got chosen was interesting and kind of funny. So we were trying to figure out, okay, what will our pseudonyms be? And he was typing out the Deliverator, which is a character in a Neal Stephenson novel called Snow Crash. Except as he was writing it out, something fell on his keyboard. And what ended up being typed was T_DEVD. So he's like, we both said, that kind of looks cool, TDevD. We'll go with it.
just run with it. I definitely think those are like, yeah, well, there's lots of cases like that in history of naming where stuff like that happens. So I guess, yeah, it explains. And I guess the ninja theme was that because of like, I suppose with ninjas, they're like hidden in the shadows, like some kind of privacy-based thing, or was it just because it's kind of cool?
I think a little of both. I think the original, if it's a little, it's a long time ago now, but I think one of the original designs for the logo was like a masked ninja, with the mask being kind of representing privacy. So I think that's why we started going off of ninja. But it, you know, I think in time it wouldn't have held up well, ninja wallet. I think samurai is one, when you say it out loud, you understand what it is. It's a samurai. But when you see it written out in that French spelling, I think it's just unique. And for search engines and everything like that, it is pretty beneficial not to have a very generic term like samurai in the typical spelling.
It sounds cooler than ninja wallet as well.
We've had a bunch of other privacy wallet guys on here. We had the Wasabi guys, we had Join Market, we had Mercury Wallet. Can you kind of explain Samurai's privacy functionality, like how you guys are doing coin joins and stuff like that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so the way we look at transactional privacy is in a holistic way. So it's not necessarily one tool like coin join and it's done, you know, you're good to go. It's a variety of different tools to address certain situations that you're in. One can be before mix, one can be mixing, i.e. coin join, and the other can be, and actually most importantly, is how you spend the post-mix coins that have been mixed. So right from the most basic fundamentals, the wallet takes care of addressing a lot of the heuristics that analysis companies use to target transactions that they're investigating. So this the users don't have to think about, the wallet does, but some of those things are like change output randomization. So many wallets will have the change output of a transaction be in a typical and deterministic place. So usually input or output number one. So you have your spend output as zero, and then output number one is the change output. Samurai randomizes where the change goes, so it's not a deterministic place. Another one that we by default address, so the user doesn't have to do anything, is what we call like type addresses. So if you're spending from a Bash32 address to a legacy address beginning with one, the change will go back to an address in your wallet beginning with one. So it's not obvious where the spend transaction was. So that's the script type heuristic that targets. And then there's more interventionist style tools. So where the user intervenes and does something to increase their privacy. In this, we have Stonewall. This adds additional inputs and outputs to a typical transaction to introduce entropy or doubt as to which inputs correspond to which outputs. These are, you can think of these as mini coin join transactions. They look like they're a coin join with at least two participants, but it's not a coordinated coin join like our other coin join product called Whirlpool. Stonewall X2, which is the same as Stonewall, except you actually do use a second person to compose these transactions. And the last additional transaction that users can engage in is something called Stowaway. This is a type of pay join transaction. So if I wanted to send you, Ricardo, some Bitcoin, I could do a Stowaway with you where both of our wallets are contributing inputs. And the resulting transaction appears like just a normal, everyday, simple Bitcoin transaction, but in fact, it's a miniature coin join between our two wallets. And this has an added benefit of, let's say I'm sending you one Bitcoin and we do a stowaway together. On the blockchain, that amount being spent won't be revealed. So it will say something like, spending 3.2 Bitcoin, but actually I sent you one. So the amount type isn't revealed. So those two transactions can be used outside of mixing or as a post-mix tool with our kind of flagship privacy tool is Whirlpool. And this is a blinded Chaumian coin join. This is the best privacy you can obtain in Bitcoin today is using a coordinated coin join. It's different from both JoinMarket and Wasabi in the sense that there's very strict rules. No address reuse, no coins that have mixed before can mix again together. You can only provide one input per mix. You know, these are like coordinated rules that make it different, but at fundamental level, it's the same idea as a Wasabi mix or a JoinMarket mix, that you're breaking the links of the past history to the future activity of those coins.
Can you explain how Dojo is different than Whirlpool for those who don't know?
Yeah, sure. So Dojo was launched before Whirlpool, and it's not a transaction privacy tool. It's a network privacy tool. So if you don't run your own node, you're relying on someone else's node is pretty much the general consensus, right? So if you're not running your own Bitcoin node, you're getting your information, your balance information, and your transaction information from someone else's node. What Dojo is, it's a software suite that allows you to run your own node and connect your Samurai wallet to that node. So you're not relying on anyone other than yourself to retrieve that information.
Something that you, sorry, this is like going back to the question Ricardo asked before, but something that you mentioned is like that your guys' coin join implementation is different to that of Wasabi or JoinMarkets, and you have these rules in place. Why is it that you guys decided to do that, to implement those things that make it different to the Wasabi's coin join? Like, is there a reason behind that?
Yeah, so we, Whirlpool is built off of a type of protocol called Zero Link. And this is what Wasabi was originally going to be built off of as well. The protocol spec Zero Link was written by Nopara from Wasabi and TDevD from Samurai with contributions from a bunch of other people. But primarily, we were both working on this spec to implement a coin join. We fully implemented that spec, and that spec has those rules in place in that spec. So whatever we've done on Whirlpool was because as part of the Zero Link specification, it should have been done. It had to be done. Why Wasabi didn't fully implement that, I'm not 100% sure. It must, you know, I'm sure there were reasons behind it. But in our view, a coin join should be theoretically perfect. A mixed transaction, a coin join transaction should be theoretically perfect, meaning that there are no deterministic links between inputs and outputs of the transaction, right? There's no, you can't say with any certainty that input one corresponds to output two. If you can do that in a mixed transaction, we think that it's a flaw of the transaction, and it can be attacked. So in order to get that perfect entropy and no deterministic links within a transaction, you have to implement those rules. So that's why we did that.
Sorry, I kind of wanted to change the subject on you again. I know Samurai is like only on chain. Do you guys have any plans to implement Lightning in any way?
No, there's no plans as of now, and it doesn't look like that will happen. I mean, we've kept track of Lightning adoption and how it's being used, and we don't see a privacy benefit per se, and we see that actual uptick in terms of consumer adoption is still very, very low. So we want to focus on chain because we still think that the bulk of transactions are happening on chain, and the privacy problem on the main chain still hasn't been resolved, really.
Ricardo did mention that we've had a couple of, you know, privacy, you know, wallets, you know, founders here, and Wasabi in particular. You know, I am very aware that you guys are not in the best of terms, but as someone who's been observing the rivalry or tussle, I couldn't really understand it. What exactly, can you please, I know this might be a bit, you know, weird for you, but could you please, how did this, you know, how did this whole, you know, tussle start? Where's the origin of the story?
You know, our view is completely focused on the software, not any individual or person involved in the creation of the software. Our view when it comes to Wasabi is that the software is flawed, and the transactions that it creates, the mixes that it creates that users are a part of, is quite weak and can be attacked quite easily. And we've, over the course of two years, maybe 3 years, since 2019, we've been producing research to make our case that this is a flawed CoinJoin implementation. I think the animosity comes from the fact that the research is brushed away by the other side, by Wasabi, and not taken seriously. And, you know, they'll say things like, you know, we're just attacking them because we're a competitor. This isn't the case. You know, when we've discovered serious issues that can be replicated by anyone, because it's all we have is the blockchain. We have everything that anyone else has. When we can provide issues that can be replicated and they get ignored or we get defamed, you know, that's where the animosity comes from. But that's not going to change. We're always looking at the blockchain. We're looking at our own transactions that Samurai makes, and we're looking at Join Market, and we're looking at Wasabi. And when we find issues in either of them, including our own, we make a report to be very transparent and open about it. We did this, for example, with Join Market. We figured out a way of attacking Join Market to de-anonymize certain coins going in and where they went out. And the response from Join Market was the complete opposite of Wasabi. They read the report, they did it themselves, they saw what the issue was, and they made a fix. You know, and that's how we think it should go. Doesn't matter where the vulnerability or the issue comes from, even if it's your competitor, you should look at it seriously. You should do your own report and investigation. And if there's something that you can do to improve the, you know, the overall product for your users, you should do it. So, I mean, that's been our position on it. And we, you know, we hope that Wasabi 2.0 fixes a lot of the issues. I can't say I'm optimistic, but I've been looking at the transactions on testnet, and they're not much better in terms of the issues that we've identified. One of the main issues that we identified, the fact that coin selection for going into a mix was not random but deterministic. We found that at the end of last year, or at the end of 2020, I believe. And, you know, their response was that we were trying to blackmail them, that it wasn't a real issue, that everything is fine. I didn't notice that they fixed that issue in Wasabi Wallet 2.0. I noticed in the code they fixed that. So that's good, but there's still some serious issues with the way the mixes are, or the transactions are composed.
As someone who has deeply studied on-chain privacy, what's your opinion on Mercury Wallet state chain swaps?
I don't know enough about it. I think it's an interesting area to explore. So I need to learn more. I need to do more research on state chains in particular. But you know, when it comes to Bitcoin privacy, I am open and very happy whenever I see a new project with those goals come around, because, you know, there's not a lot of us working on this stuff. So it's good to see.
I guess, so it sounds like the problem between, you know, the two, Wasabi and Samurai, heads back quite a distance, obviously, if one founder and one founder worked on something, and then there was some form of disagreement about actually following it, then that kind of makes some kind of explanation as to where that comes from.
I mean, the animosity didn't start there, actually. I mean, we did split at a certain point because, you know, we wanted to follow Zero Link and they wanted to change things up. And there was no animosity at that point. It was like, okay, you do it how you want to do it, and we'll do it how we want to do it. Prior to, or you know, July, I believe, 2019, there was absolutely zero animosity between the projects at all. You know, I would get asked, you know, should I use Wasabi or Samurai? I said, well, if you're on desktop, use Wasabi, because, you know, we're not on desktop. And if you're on your Android, use Samurai, because, you know, Wasabi's not on mobile. It was a very simple thing. It was only once Wasabi mixes started hitting mainnet and we were able to look at them and analyze them, we saw serious issues. You know, there was address reuse in the mixes. There was huge amounts of consolidation from in a single mix, meaning that you were basically mixing with yourself. You know, 6-7 of your inputs were yours in a single transaction. All these things that we had taken note of, the fact that unmixed change is in the same mix transaction. You know, to a layperson, they don't understand what this means, particularly for them. And we try to explain what it means by putting out research reports or long tweet threads, visual graphics showing what we were trying to explain. And the animosity starts where the developers of Wasabi brush off what we're saying as if we're making something up to harm their reputation, when that's not what we're doing at all. You know, again, we have a blockchain. We look at the transactions on the blockchain. Anyone can do this. Anyone can check what we're saying. You know, so when we get called, you know, liars, it's like two slaps in the face. One is, you know, it's personally, you know, kind of rude to call someone a liar when you haven't even looked at their claim. But two, the data is right there for you and anyone to verify. It's not like we're saying something that can't be shown or can't be proven. It's right there. It's the blockchain. And I think what it's shown us really is that Bitcoin users, by and large, really have no idea how to even read a blockchain, how to look at a blockchain, explore and figure out what's going on. They don't really have that in their wheelhouse. So, I mean, this year we put out a 7-part YouTube series explaining really the fundamentals of how to use a blockchain explorer and how to analyze your transactions. And it's seven videos, each under 7 minutes long. It's a really good series. And at the end of that series, you'll be able to track your own transactions and analyze your own transactions and figure out, hey, what exactly am I revealing when I use the blockchain? I think the good that's come from the quote unquote animosity is users are becoming educated. You know, they're becoming more educated. What I would have liked to see is the issues being fixed, so users didn't shoot themselves in the foot when using the software, but we didn't see that. So instead we've seen users becoming more educated. And as you become more educated, You verify, you say, hey, maybe is Samurai just being a mean competitor, or is there something to what they're saying? And they look for themselves and they can see. And once they can see for themselves, it's done.
During the back and forth with Samurai and Wasabi, one of the things that came up is a post from Greg Maxwell on Reddit. And I'm sure that you're aware of that post where he says that he does not trust people from Samurai. And, you know, for lots of people in Bitcoin, they are not, you know, they do not have, you know, do not possess the technical knowledge to actually understand these things in detail. And they would, you know, refer to people like Greg, you know, to actually outsource their thinking. So how would you, I'm sure you responded to that, but could you please like address that here?
Well, I believe the Reddit post you're speaking of is now something like 4 years old. I mean, I don't really honestly care what Greg Maxwell has to say at all. You know, the reasoning for him, quote unquote, not trusting Samurai is ridiculous. It goes back to 2015 when we first started. Samurai, as I explained, started as a project for just me and my co-founder. We then created a private group of less than 100 people, and sent them the wallet file to test out and play around with. It was not, you know, open source yet. It was literally a couple weeks old. And we had, like I said, less than 100 people playing around and testing and checking the wallet out. Maxwell got a copy of the APK, the file we sent out to our that closed private group, and decompiled it and made a post on Reddit saying that, you know, it was bad because it was using blockchain.info as an API. Now, back in 2015, there was really no other option if you wanted to use an API. It was pretty much blockchain.info or no one else. And two, we had already told our group, our private group, that it was a temporary lookup until we had our own nodes set up, and everyone knew that. So he, you know, was trying to say that we were maliciously including this API and not telling anyone, and that is untrustworthy behavior. Well, you know, I didn't really have a problem with him getting the file and decompiling it. We weren't trying to hide anything. Our small private group knew exactly what they were using, and we had been very straightforward and upfront. You can find every Reddit post I've made about this going back to 2015, that we were relying on third-party APIs, but before we released publicly, it would be using our own nodes or the user's own nodes. And, you know, we've made good on that. Everything that we've said and, you know, claimed, we've made good on. The code is completely open source. There's nothing that you have to trust. So I think the broader issue of reverting to gatekeepers, you know, I think that's something that should be addressed in Bitcoin. What does Greg have to say? What does Luke have to say? You know, these people aren't infallible. Right before Greg made that post is when we first warned about Wasabi, right? So within we first said warned about Wasabi and the weakness of the mixing. What came after that was Greg posting on Reddit that he doesn't trust us, and Wasabi sharing that very widely with their users as a way to respond to the technical issues that we brought up. So it was a social attack in response to technical issues. And you know, we haven't made any official response to it because Greg can say whatever he wants. We obviously disagree. You know, our code and what our transactions leave behind on the blockchain speaks for itself, I think.
I know recently Samurai added atomic swaps with Monero. As someone who studied privacy like you have, how do you see Monero's privacy? Do you think it's good?
So we haven't implemented atomic swaps yet. All we mentioned was that we were planning on implementing it. So it hasn't been implemented currently, but it is in the roadmap. Yes, the privacy on Monero seems to be quite strong. The biggest issue with Monero is due to the fact that it has this strong privacy and mass blockchain. I think it's more difficult to audit the supply. So that's what turns a lot of Bitcoiners off. But if you're looking from a pure privacy perspective, it appears that Monero is living up to the claims. It seems to be a very private chain. Primarily what we were seeing on Samurai was our users were using a centralized service like FixFloat to swap their UTXOs that they couldn't enter into mixes, so they're too small. So we're talking like 5,000 sats to 15,000 sats, maybe a little bit more. So they weren't able to put them into a Whirlpool mix. And what they were doing was using a fixed float centralized swapper to swap into Monero and store them up until they could swap back into Bitcoin and enter a mix. This is one of the ways users were handling their unmixed change. So we say, okay, if our users are doing that already, what can we do to help them do this in a way that doesn't bring in a custodial centralized third party? right? Because if you're using fixed float, even though fixed float is pretty good and there hasn't been any issues with them reported, they could theoretically steal your Bitcoin, right? As you're making that swap, they could theoretically be given a court order to give any information about that swap. So it's not a peer-to-peer thing. What atomic swaps allow is for a peer swap between a Bitcoin user and a Monero user without a third party in between. So we decided that if our users were already doing a swap, we might as well figure out a way for them to do a swap without counterparty risk. So that was kind of the idea around the atomic swaps. So we're hoping to get that in there this year, but we'll see how things go.
You guys started with Samurai Wallet quite a while back, and obviously Monero was in its very early infancy, I think, at the time, I think back historically wise. Have you guys ever kind of considered sort of, because I know obviously with Bitcoin, I guess what I'm going to ask is, why did you guys sort of stick to and choose to remain working with privacy in Bitcoin when obviously at the base layer, it's not that baked in and it's quite difficult to actually get right, when Monero was a thing? Like, did you guys ever review it at the time and kind of give it some thought as to whether you should not maybe switch to Monero, but maybe have Monero as like an option on the wallet as well as Bitcoin, things like that? Like, why did you guys choose to go for remaining with Bitcoin and working on Bitcoin over, you know, sort of giving some thought to Monero and being able to use the wallet for Monero?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. So early on, while we were still planning the wallet out in 2015, we knew it was going to be a Bitcoin wallet, you know, not a Monero wallet or any other altcoin wallet, because we weren't interested in the other coins that existed. We were really only interested in Bitcoin. We were earning in Bitcoin, and Bitcoin had the most mature and market. Everything else was at that time really just a pump and dump ride. But we did have the idea early on of some kind of transaction that would bump you, take you out of the Bitcoin blockchain into the Monero blockchain before you came back into the Bitcoin blockchain, right? So it was an idea that you would break the tract because you would jump into Monero's blockchain before coming out in Bitcoin. And we had an idea for it, and we looked into it, and that's when we learned that Monero wasn't a carbon copy of Bitcoin like all the other altcoins were. Like, in order to implement Monero in the wallet, it would take a huge engineering effort versus something like implementing Litecoin, which is basically Bitcoin with a different name, right? So like on an implementation level, implementing Monero into the wallet was outside of our technical ability in terms of how much resources we had. Like, there was only two of us. So we got rid of that idea very early on. As for why we stayed on Bitcoin, well, I think besides, again, the fact that, you know, the Bitcoin is what we use and live on still, the fact is Bitcoin has the biggest network effect. It has the largest amount of users. Monero is not going to overtake Bitcoin in that respect. And because it has the most amount of usage, there's the bigger opportunities in Bitcoin to improve privacy. Like, what could we do with a Monero wallet? You know, not much. But with a Bitcoin wallet, we can do a lot, right? Because we know where the fundamental weaknesses are on a transparent ledger, and we know how analysis companies make use of the ledger to conduct their investigations and whatnot. So we know how we can throw a wrench into their ways and get, you know, why are people using Bitcoin? Well, because they are. So we should be there to try to give them some decent level of transactional privacy while they do use it.
So I guess there's like, so I suppose the incentive is, hey, this is the most popular one. It's the one that we also like anyway, and that we're using. When it comes to cryptocurrencies, it's obviously the oldest as well, the original. But then I guess also, as you say, it comes from there's more of a, not problem, but there's more of a use case for you guys. There's more of something to solve, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, if Monero works on a privacy in a privacy way. If Monero actually works, then it will be delisted from any centralized regulated exchange. It's just a matter of time. And it's already started happening, right? And it really, if that happens, it really does become that Monero and Bitcoin are linked. You know, you have a bunch of Monero, you have no way of converting it into fiat when you need to. And a lot of Monero users are retailers of some sort of another, whether where on the market they sit, whether it's white, black, or gray, is questionable. But they need to get into fiat. And what we've seen is they go into Bitcoin. So, you know, it's if Monero works on a privacy level, then it will be delisted. And that will be an endorsement for its effectiveness. And we'll see a lot of inflow into Bitcoin from Monero. So, you know, there's huge opportunity in Bitcoin. There still is so much to do on a privacy, in the privacy space, you know, just in the application space. I mean, there's plenty that can be done on the protocol layer level as well. It remains to be seen if that happens. But, you know, the opportunity is in Bitcoin, I think.
It's funny, when you did mention a point about, you know, having gatekeepers in the Bitcoin community. And going through some of the summarized recent tweets, it kind of seemed like, you know, if someone who didn't know, they think that, you know, you've fallen out of love with Bitcoin or the Bitcoin community. And sometimes, you know, people do kind of see that, like, there's a certain narrative that you'd have to toe in the Bitcoin community, a certain, you know, kind of orientation that, you know, if number go up is the narrative of the day, then, you know, that is what, you know, it's going to be. And so how does that, you know, make you feel? Because like I said, it kind of feels like you're falling out of love with Bitcoin. It seems like you're working on Bitcoin now because, you know, you already have a business built on top of it.
Well, I mean, the number go up thing is relatively recent. It's a, you know, 2016, 2017 Bitcoiners, I think, and newer. When we got into Bitcoin, it was not about number go up. It was about censorship resistance. It was about permissionless access to the financial system. It was about, you know, making transactions that, you know, they say you can't make. And that's why we built Samurai, and that's why we're still here, is because that's what we're about. So we think that number go up is a distraction, and have no problem, you know, saying as much. You know, everyone who has Bitcoin enjoys it when the number goes up. Like, no one is going to deny that. When the number goes up, everyone is happy. But that's not what it's about, you know. So when you think of it purely in that way, Bitcoin is just another investment, and you're actually just revealing a fiat mindset because you think in fiat. So number go up makes you happy because your fiat, you know, net worth goes up. You know, as far as we're concerned, Bitcoin just needs to have a price. I don't care what the price is. It just has to have one. Because that's what it takes to, you know, at the basic fundamental level to have an economy. So, you know, we believe that with privacy, Bitcoin can really be unlocked and as of what it was meant to be. But as the kind of talking heads and gatekeepers and narrative is all now number go up, we see that what people will tolerate to have number go up changes dramatically, right? So custodial services, no problem. KYC, no problem, because all of this pushes number up. And we have a big problem with that. You know, we have a big problem with custodialism. We have a big problem with KYC. We have a big problem with anything that undermines a user's privacy, which both of those things do. So it's not that we've fallen out of love with Bitcoin. If we fell out of love with it, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing. You know, we've been here much, you know, much longer than a lot of these people, and have seen Bitcoin grow and change. And it's expected that as adoption widens, the fundamental values will be erased or disappear or be diminished. This is to be expected with anything that has a broad adoption. So, you know, it's not a surprise, but we're here to keep our vision alive. And that's what we're doing. We're doing what we got into this to do all those years ago.
In that spirit, what's your take on the financial censorship that the Canadian truckers faced with their bank accounts getting shut down and stuff? Do you think that highlights what Bitcoin's really important for?
I think it woke a lot of people up. Yeah, I think a lot of people, Bitcoiners as well as just everyday normal people, saw the value of a censorship resistant form of money. The Canadian truckers got stung. The way that they got their donations paid out was really silly, but that's how it went down. And I think, you know, just judging from the amount of people that have been installing Samurai Wallet and entering Whirlpool, I think something definitely shifted, something changed, and woke some people up. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see how the distribution of funds actually happened. Seemingly not that well. I think one of the guys got arrested as well, and essentially gave away.
One of the organizers got a visit from the some Canadian police force with a search warrant, I suppose. So they searched his place, and he says that they took the keys with them. So he says that the keys are no longer in his control, and they're in the control of this Canadian police agency or whatever. We'll see if that's true or not based on the activity what happens with those coins, right? If those coins that are supposedly in control of whatever Canadian police end up going to crypto.com, you know, it's likely that they're not in control. Someone else is in control. So, I mean, the blockchain is there. We have our eye on the distribution because it's just interesting. You know, the way that they chose to distribute these funds was silly. And then they videotaped themselves doing it at a time when it became, you know, unlawful to do so for these particular funds. That was a big mistake.
On that note, so I'm gonna just read a text from an article that says, jumping off from the analysis, blockchain analytics company Chainalysis saw that the presumed attacker had sent 50 BTC to Wasabi Wallet, private desktop. And basically he used Wasabi and he was caught. Now, I think this was the...
This is the DAO hacker you're talking about, right?
Yeah. So my question is, if that was, you know, he was using Samurai Dojo, basically going through you guys, would it still be the same end result?
Well, not in the way that they were able to figure it out with Wasabi. No, it wouldn't be possible. It wouldn't be possible on either Whirlpool or Join Market. It's only possible on Wasabi. So we looked into this. So this is the DAO hacker you're talking about. And what this guy did was use Shapeshift, I believe, to convert into Bitcoin. So we knew the Shapeshift TX IDs of the, we'll call them the illicit coins, right? They entered, as you said, it's actually a little bit more than 50. I think they did 75 into Wasabi. There were just two transactions. But let's talk about the 50 Bitcoin transaction and what happened here. So they put 50 Bitcoins into Wasabi. Now, one of the things we've been talking about nonstop is the fact that unmixed change is a part of every single Wasabi mixed transaction. So in every mixed transaction, there is a portion of that transaction that has not been mixed that can still be linked to the person who deposited it in, okay? The 50 Bitcoin hacker mixed, I think it was initially 6 Bitcoin. The rest of it, so 40 something Bitcoin, could still be tracked to that user. This is how Wasabi works. By the fourth mix, unfortunately, the unmixed output of, it was at that point something like 30 Bitcoin, was sent to an address that had been sent a mixed output. So there was address reuse, where you had one output on the address was a mixed coin, and then the other output on the address was this unmixed change that follows along. So because that address reuse happened, it's not the user who did it, it's the client, the wallet software that did it. Shouldn't have happened, but we've been saying this has been happening since 2019, so it happened again. Because that happened, the next time they spent, they always spent 6 mixed transactions, so a total of 1 Bitcoin out of the 50 Bitcoin that they put in, they sent that to Poloniex. But because of the address reuse, we knew that that 1 Bitcoin that they sent out from the mixer was connected to the 50 Bitcoin that went in from the DAO hacker. So that address reuse is what got them screwed up. It's not possible to do that in Whirlpool. One, because the unmixed change does never a part of the mix, ever. The unmixed change goes to a completely separate account in the wallet, a completely separate derivation path. So it's not possible for the wallet to ever make a transaction that combines those outputs. And in joint market, it's the same. They use a separate derivation path. So again, you can't link these outputs together because one of them is not mixed and one of them is mixed, and they got both sent to the same address. That's what did it. So on our YouTube, I put a 5-minute video on my YouTube channel that shows exactly how you can do it yourself using free tools, how to track the wallet of the 50 Bitcoin as it goes through Wasabi. And you see that address you use, and it opens up the whole window. So no, it wouldn't be possible in Whirlpool. It wouldn't be possible in Joy Market. It's only possible in Wasabi. And it's exactly what we've been saying since 2019, that this is a big issue because this could happen. And that's exactly what happened this time.
It's kind of weird because this is an issue for Wasabi. And as it seems like you pointed out, that it's something that's obviously like a flaw. Wouldn't it be better if they just fix it and, you know, it does well for their business? I mean, why would they be, you know, ignoring something that could potentially, you know, harm their business? It feels, you know, a little odd to me, you know, don't you think?
Yeah, I don't understand it at all. Look, we got a report. Someone reached out to us and said, hey, I've been looking at the blockchain, and I see 5,000 occurrences of address reuse from post-mix spends in Samurai, right? That's what they said to us. So not in the mix, because it's impossible for address reuse in the mix, but they were seeing post-mix spends, so transactions that were occurring after mixing, having a large amount of address reuse. That's what they reported to us. We spent a month researching this. We spent a month investigating. We looked up on the blockchain every single post-mix transaction that had come from Whirlpool that ever at that point, and analyzed each one to see the address reuse impact. Now, fortunately, that initial 5,000 claim was wrong. There was a lot of false positives there. The actual number was something like 200, which is very low, but we still took that 200 very seriously. And we broke it down even further and said, okay, out of that 200, how many of those were the result of them, the user, doing something to reuse addresses versus the client screwing up, the wallet software screwing up and reusing addresses? It was something like 100 was what we would say was our fault, right? 100 of these post-mix transactions had some form of address reuse that the user had no control over. So it was our fault that happened. Nowhere close to the 5,000, but still a problem in our view. So we fixed it. We figured out a way that we could stop that from occurring, and we rolled that out. That is how you respond to someone saying, hey, something's wrong with your software, right? And that's what we would expect Wasabi to do, is research it themselves, not take what we're saying at face value and go, okay, yeah, absolutely. No, look at it yourself. Because that's exactly what we did, right? We got a report that said 5,000 address reuses. Okay, we found that it was actually 100, but still, of that 100, we did something about it. We made the software better for users. Why they haven't acknowledged it, I have no idea. I don't even speculate on it. It's what frustrates me so much is that it's, again, right there. Anyone can verify it. It's just a blockchain. But very few people do that.
Does Samurai have any... I know you guys are like super innovative with Ricochet and Stonewall and a bunch of features that other wallets don't have. Do you guys have any new features that you're planning on implementing?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple things that are in our pipeline. One thing we want to do is introduce something called multi-party TX0. So the TX0 is, you can think of it as a setup transaction before entering Whirlpool. CoinJoin. So every user that enters Whirlpool CoinJoin, they have this transaction, the TX0, where they pay the CoinJoin fee, and their Bitcoin is split up into identical size amounts. Currently, anyone watching the blockchain knows that one TX0 is one entity, right? It can only be one entity involved in that TX0. Transaction. What we want to do is create multi-party TX0 so you can have multiple entities in one TX0 transaction. And that would undermine the heuristic that one person is in control of this amount of Bitcoin going into Whirlpool, right? So if I want to mix a Bitcoin, you want to mix a Bitcoin, that TX0 transaction would take your Bitcoin and my Bitcoin in this one, you know, one transaction. So that's something that is going to improve things for users. We're working on something kind of big, but we're not talking about exactly what it is. But we've been working on that most of last year and a little bit of this year. We're hoping by April we'll be able to talk about it, though.
Something that I wish I'd asked Wasabi, but how do you guys monetize your wallet? Like, how are you guys bringing in income? Is it that you raised funding and then have used that to create this? Or what is it that you guys are doing to bring in income? And I've seen, obviously, you have different products, and there's things like the node you can buy. So obviously those things will bring in some, but what's like the main income source?
So actually we don't make any money from the nodes. That's a completely separate team. they just use the Dojo software that we created. But the way that we've monetized, and no, it hasn't been through investment. It's been through our assumption early on that users would be willing to pay a fee to gain transactional privacy on the blockchain. So we have a Whirlpool fee, a coordinator fee. This serves two purposes. The primary purpose of the coordinator fee is to prevent Sybil attacks. So if the coordinator is free, then you can just for free with no limit, just stuff the coordinator here with junk to bring it down, or try to become, you know, four of the inputs in a 5-person mix. So you have a coordinator fee to reduce that, but also helps pay for the servers and the people working on stuff. We've also had Ricochet in the wallet, which is a type of transaction that adds 5 hops of history before your coins arrive at their destination. So let's say you're sending to a centralized exchange and you don't know whether they're going to like the fact that you used CoinJoin. You could make that a Ricochet transaction for a small extra fee, and it will create 5 transactions before hitting the exchange. So if the exchange is looking back 4 or 5 hops, they're not seeing anything that, you know, they wouldn't like. And that's been in the wallet since 2016. People have been using that for many years, and it seems to work well for them. But those are the two primary ways, though.
Gotcha. Thanks. That's cool. It provides more clarity on that one. Because I'd assume there's some kind of fee or something, but I just wasn't entirely certain. Like, I've never used Samurai myself, so yeah. I wasn't entirely certain on that one. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, the coordinator fee, it can be very low. The lowest fee is 5,000 Satoshis for entering into the 100,000 Satoshi pool. So, you know, it's you can put any amount into the mixer and pay a flat fee. And you can get remixes for free as well. So you don't pay miner fee or coordinator fee for additional mixes that you're involved in.
Yeah, I'm a big, you know, Samurai user. I think I'm probably one of like the only, but you know, the guy who only uses from Nigeria who uses Samurai. I was pretty pissed when you guys removed the, you know, USD, you know, value.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was really angry. I was like, what the hell, man? Like, I know you guys mentioned that, you know, you wanted to de-tiatify, you know, people, but come on, man, like, you know.
That was, so you've been using it a long time. That was 2018, I think, is when we got rid of that. So, you know, I think it was the right move. One, we had it was a big support burden. You know, at the time there was a lot of new users coming into Bitcoin, and you would not believe the number of support emails we got from people saying, you know, I had $1, I had $10 yesterday, and now I have, you know, $8. Why did you steal from me? You know, send it back. I mean, seriously, it was a lot of people. And it was just kind of shocking to us that this concept was foreign to all the Bitcoin users that were entering now. So we said, well, what's the best way to teach them that they have no dollars when they're dealing with Bitcoin? And we got rid of it. We yanked it out and replaced it with Satoshis. And Satoshis became popular. A lot of wallets do that now with displaying the Satoshi value. But yeah, in Samurai Wallet, you know, it relies on the merchant to set the exchange rate, right? So another big issue that we had when we had fiat values in the wallet was your wallet would be pulling from, let's say, Bitstamp, and then your buddy's wallet would be pulling from, you know, Coinbase, the price, and the price is different. There's not one uniform Bitcoin price. There's multiple different prices out there. And that could cause issues with exchanges and such. So yeah, we got rid of it, and I'm happy we did. I think it's better without it. And most users get used to it or you know, don't even notice it at this point. We kept fiat values in Sentinel, which is our watch only wallet app. And that will make more sense because we, you know, in a very upcoming update to that app, you're able to compose offline transactions and then sign it with your, you know, whatever hardware wallet or your Samurai wallet or something else. So this is the app that you can transact from. And when you're transacting, the fiat value makes a little sense there, and receiving as the merchant. So a lot of Sentinel users are the merchant. They're selling a t-shirt for Bitcoin. It makes sense for them to set what the exchange rate is, not the person sending the Bitcoin. You know, for example, when you buy a gift card on BitRefill, you don't tell BitRefill what the rate is that you're going to be paying at. BitRefill tells you. They say, hey, this is the rate that you have to pay. So it's up to the merchant, not the wallet. And that's kind of where we landed with it.
My last question is there ever going to be a desktop version of Samurai?
We would love to have a desktop wallet. We would love to have an iOS wallet. We would love to have all this stuff. But the team is still so small that we don't have a huge amount of resources to develop the desktop or iOS or anything like that. So we're going to focus on mobile still, and maybe sometime in the future we'll have more resources and we can do it properly and do it right.
My last question. You did mention that you know there's no intention to support Lightning because adoption is low and basically you do not see any real benefits. I think most people will disagree, you know, that, you know, they see the benefits of Lightning, you know, super low fees, some privacy, you know, privacy benefits. And I find odd, you know, for you to be a big, you know, Bitcoin and, you know, privacy proponent, it kind of seems like you do not believe in Lightning.
No, I don't believe in Lightning at all. I think it was completely shoehorned in as the quote unquote scaling solution at a time where there was a perceived crisis in terms of block space. You know, during the fork wars, and right before the fork wars, there was a huge spam attack on the network. The network was being the blockchain was being clogged with transactions, that were not true economic transactions. That was an actual spam attack. And the intent of that spam attack was to raise the miner fee. So in a response to that, people, you know, developers, core developers particularly, had this desire to come up with the scaling solution. And I think that Lightning was a option, and I don't think it is the best option, but it's gone so far now that it's in people's minds the only option. And there's plenty of other things out there in terms of scaling. It could be drive chains, it could be side chains, it could be a whole different type of network. I think what we've seen with Lightning now that we've had years of it being developed and pushed is that there is an overwhelming tendency to provide custodial solutions on top of Lightning, because dealing with Lightning in a non-custodial way is a nightmare. Okay, the user has to balance channels. They have to, you know, make these backups, because if their node goes down, so does their funds. I mean, all of this stuff that makes it inhospitable for non-custodial use. You're not going to get a large amount of non-custodial use here. And we see that with all the most popular Lightning wallets being custodial wallets. And we see a centralizing, you know, factor there. And the privacy benefits of Lightning are very overstated if you're dealing with a centralized network. So no, we don't. And I believe, you know, Sergey posts every year the uptick that Bitrefill is having from Lightning users. And it's virtually none. I think Ethereum gets more use than Lightning on Bitrefill. So, I mean, I don't see how anyone can disagree with the fact that adoption has not been taken off. People aren't using it in that way. And the people that are using it, it's a very small community. It's a niche thing. Maybe it will change. But even so, I think it's going to go in the direction of custody. And when you go the direction of custody, KYC shortly follows. So our goal is, and our focus is on the main chain. We have no issue or, you know, beef with anyone that works on Lightning. I think that's great. Developers should work on what they want to work on. And especially the developers who are focusing on non-custody. I think that, you know, they're doing great work and should continue doing so. But our focus is on the main chain because, you know, it's still being used considerably more than Lightning or anything else.
But yeah, you did mention that, you know, that Lightning was a response to this, you know, the issue of scaling, but scaling is still a problem, at least down the road, you know, down the road is still a problem. So what you did mention, you know, sidechains, do you have, you know, any specific, you know, scaling solution that, you know, you are kind of, you know, anticipating or, you know, that sort of thing?
There's not any particular solution that I'm excited about or anticipating or anything like that. I think, obviously, in the future, scaling on second and third layers is going to be required for Bitcoin. Everyone who's involved in Bitcoin, especially in the early days, knows this. But the reality of the situation is, for the most part, consistently, blocks are clearing at one sat per byte. Right? Users want their transaction in the next block. They're going in at one sat per byte and they can get it done. You know, there's spikes here and there, but miner fees have not gone up. Block space competition is not a problem. And we're in 2022 at the height of an adoption curve. Those people didn't go into Lightning. They went in to other blockchains. They went into Ethereum. They went into Solana. They went into all these other things. So Bitcoin's second layer has been Ethereum. That's how it's played out in the actual market. You know, that's going to be a problem for Bitcoin when that block subsidy is gone. So that's going to need this. That needs to be figured out. But that's the reality of the situation. And I think it's largely due to, again, a malinvestment of time and resources in Lightning too early. That's just my hypothesis on it. We'll see how things play out.
Future will tell us the answer to what happens, I suppose. Hey, we're over an hour now, so it's probably a good time to wrap up. And it's been awesome to have you on and get a good understanding of a better understanding of Samurai Wallet and a better understanding of the history of it and where like the Wasabi split happened and things like that. So it's really been quite useful to have you. So I appreciate that. Is there any sort of final words you'd like to say or any sort of plugs you'd like to give before we head out?
Well, I just want to say thanks for having me. I've been a big BitRefill user since 2012. I met the team over in Stockholm around that time, Sergey and everyone. I think there was only two or three other people, but it's been a great company and a useful tool for everyone. So I just want to say thank you to BitRefill for that. As for my own plugs, I think, you know, there's a general go to our website and go to our Twitter and all that crap, but go to YouTube and search for Samurai Wallet and check out the privacy series that I had brought up before in our conversation. It will take less than 45 minutes to watch all 7 videos, and you'll come away with a really good understanding of how your privacy can be undermined on the blockchain and how you can defend against that kind of undermining. So Samurai Wallet on YouTube, and check that out.
Awesome. Well, you heard it here. Go check it out. And I saw the video series that you guys are creating. I started watching one video, then got sidetracked going to get dinner and haven't finished it, but I'm going to watch the whole series myself. So yeah, thanks for creating content like that. Thank you for doing what you're doing. And thanks to all of our listeners for listening in. It's much appreciated. We hope you have an amazing day, week, month, year. Keep loving life, keep being happy, and keep buying Bitcoin. See you soon.